You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Making waves.
All right, well, welcome to Making Waves. I think episode 32. Chad, is that where we're at these days? 32?
Yeah, I've counted them on all 32. Five of my hands.
Listen, well, this is a great episode, guys. We have a Shiprocked favorite with us. Please welcome singer-songwriter and frontman of the band Joyous Wolf. This is Nick Reese. Welcome, Nick. Nick is waving, so hello, everyone.
Hello. Hello.
Hey, bud, listen, thank you for giving us your Wednesday evening. We do appreciate it. I guess it's afternoon out there in Noel, Southern California.
Yeah, I had a really busy schedule.
You guys are in the middle of something. You guys are recording a full-length album.
We're getting there.
Nice way to, since you guys kind of came on the scene, you've a couple of EPs, including, I guess, the new thing right now is a Mother Rebel EP.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us right now? What's going on with the album? Where you guys are at with that? What can people expect?
We're pretty much almost done writing it. I think we're really getting there, and then sessions should start fairly soon. So,
do you guys plan on recording down in Orange County? Or are you gonna?
We're gonna be farm it out somewhere.
Okay, close enough.
Is this going to follow kind of in line with what you guys have done before? This you guys have a certain sound. And if you don't mind me saying, it's kind of this MC5 meets Southern rock with a lot of Motown and some other influences in there.
It's a cool description. I like that one.
Little Detroit, little Muscle Shoals, and a little I guess a little bit more Detroit with the old Motown thing going on. So
yeah, I think there's going to be a very significant shift from what we've done to what we're doing now. I think it's definitely we've just kind of grown a lot, and I don't know, the first EP there was a lot of cooks in the kitchen as far as like just what was influencing why we did this or that, and this time it's really just kind of been on our own terms, and I think it's gonna be very different. I honestly think
we're talking about like Afro bounce. We going straight up to putting some New Orleans in that or what?
It won't be place and time, and it won't be anything that we've done so far. It's just kind of a more I guess maybe a more alternative feel to it.
Right on. Cool. Well, I'm excited about it. As Justin said, being not just a Shiprocked favorite, but I've seen Circuits great.
Yeah, I think too. I mean, obviously, we always talk about time shifting bands' parameters and maybe what their sound is, or your own personal taste of influences. And 2019 doesn't seem like a long time ago, but in essence, 2-3 years in a band's life is those are dog years.
Yeah, you know, like we're just in a different spot, you know, much different spot than we were then. And I think, really, just speaking for myself, I think like, I really get to be myself for the first time, and I'm, you know, very, very happy about that.
That's great. Well, not to like compound too far ahead of the charge here, but did you feel like you couldn't be yourself before at some point in time?
I mean, I feel like
being such a young band, I can understand that.
I think there was just a lot of like pressure and having to be a certain way and do certain things because of the community that we kind of fell into. And I've had a lot of time to think about that, you know, and it's like, is that me or is that just something I made up? And ultimately it's just a character that I made, you know, for our stage show and everything back then. And now things are just a lot different, and I'm really in a place where I feel like, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. I just kind of want to do whatever I want. And not saying it's like it's going to be like night and day, like or whatever, but I feel like I'm much more myself. I feel like I'm singing like myself. I feel like I'm writing what I want to write about, and as opposed to like trying to accommodate a lot of things, which I felt was happening a lot during like Place and Time.
I was just going to say square through the circle. I've been through it, man. It's nothing. There's nothing more freeing than putting your edges back on. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
When you talk about growth and being yourself and things that are expected of you, one thing I want to ask about, you guys are in a relatively short amount of time, you guys have been known as this really blazing live band. Not only from just a actual musical and performance style, vocals and playing, but obviously your gymnastics of sorts. Yeah. Is that still something people can expect from you as a live person, even though you're kind of changing? I mean, will you always kind of have that James Brown kind of flair to you?
I think dancing is natural to me. That's something. I think just the way that I do my shows are going to be different. You know, in the past, it was all about we just making it so that the crowd would remember. You know, because it's the first time they know you. It's the first time anyone knows you. You have no music released to speak of, and somehow you have to make them not forget you. Mm-hmm. And that was my whole MO, like from since like 2017 to like the end of 2019 was just strictly that. And I don't know. I think I just, with this time away, I'm just like, okay, I want to do things differently. I mean, I'll always be dancing. I'll always be, that's a part of me to being a bit extra. I like to put on a show, but I think the way I do it, it's going to be different.
Yeah,
it's exhausting. So it is Afro Bounce.
It's a reggae album.
Not that I want to get there just yet, but since we're talking about your stacing, you mentioned how people remembering you. Nick, I remember the first time we had you on the deck stage at Shiprock, and you started climbing the lighting rig, which we all were like, that is super impressive, super scary, and yeah, that's going to stick in our minds. So yeah, bravo. Job well done.
Well, that was like I said, that was always the goal. I didn't care.
Sure.
I mean, again, I'm still banned from Los Rages Festival for life after the stunt I pulled there. But that was great because the best part about that was we got a ton of press for it, you know, and people just through the grapevine talked about how crazy it was because it was like, it was like six stories high.
Yeah.
In my dress shoes, you know, and people were.
In silver lamé pants. I think it's just the insurance company they're worried about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was fine because of that, every festival we played after that, you know, it was consecutive. It was Rockville, Carolina Rebellion, Northern Invasion, Rock on the Range, all four in a row. And every single festival, our crowd just got better because of what happened in Las Vegas, because people just wanted to see if I would do it again. And I didn't because I didn't need to.
Yeah, it's kind of like Eddie Vedder. Eddie used to do that in the first album, and then nowadays he still puts on a really great, I mean, ultimate frontman kind of stuff, but there's no need longer this thing now to basically set yourself on fire in order to do it. So
yeah, I mean, you know, that was always something that I heard which bothered me profusely, because it was like, I'm just doing this so that people look. I'm not doing this to invoke like imagery of the past or whatever. I'm just doing this because I want you to remember. And whether that's because it reminds you of something or it's brand new, it doesn't matter to me. But yeah, just this kind of, I think I was saying earlier is like, I feel like this will be the first time where someone listens to me, save maybe for like our last single we put out, where people can hear me as opposed to like whoever was trying to like push me, hey, you should be like throw a little bit of that in or a little bit of this in. It's like, this feels like, okay, I'm just doing what I want to do.
Yeah. One thing before I hand you to Chad real quick, Chad, I'm sorry. I just had this thought. You talk about finding your own voice. I tell you one person, I was listening again to some of your stuff, and there's a song called Feel the Low, and I can't help. And this is all respect to you. I can't help but not think of Jeff Buckley when I hear you sing that song.
That's a major compliment. I've never thought of myself to be much of a of a Buckley sound alike.
Because I was listening to Grace last week, and then it was still so fresh in my mind again. And then when I listened to that track came on, I was like, Jesus God, man, that's pretty damn close. So I just want to let you know that some people, you know, myself, I'm hearing things.
I have no problem with people when people do it stuff like that. I'm just saying there was a point where it was almost like expected of me to behave a certain way or to do certain things. And I was like, it's just because I can do it doesn't mean it's what I want to do. And that's like the difference. It's like, okay, what do I want to do? How do I want to do it? And I figured that out, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, I can relate to everything you're saying on numerous levels through my trials and tribulations of the music career. One thing I wanted to ask you about, because you kind of segued into it perfectly. Are you referring to Mother Rebel, the last single that you guys put out, or when you Odyssey. Say the Odyssey? So I have it. I have it written down as because I listened to it to make sure I had it all. But so Odyssey, then Mother Rebel, or Mother Rebel, then Odyssey?
Well, technically, Mother Rebel came out on Place and Time, our EP, and it was re-released because it went to it just out of nowhere. Radio station here in LA, KLOS, sure you're familiar with, picked it up, and out of the blue, for no reason that we really know about. And from there, it went to a bunch of other stations, and it ended up on Octane, and we had a good run with it. And so because of that, we're like, hey, let's just put it out again with the live version we did. And just that, it was just something to kind of fill in the blank, you know, a little compilation of something, some stuff that was left over.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the fucking best situation you can actually hope for, especially during these times where, like, you know, you're writing and you need something to talk about. And then it happens for you, capitalizing on it. And when I say capitalizing on it, I mean, like, moving your own internal engines, not the financial versions of what it is. But, like, you know, those happy accidents, I can only imagine.
It did a lot for us. It gave us a lot of credibility, I think. And it turned a lot of heads where it mattered. And that really played into why, you know, we're feeling so great about the record we're making now, is because I feel like it gave us a lot of freedom. It gave a lot of trust, you know, in what we were doing. And, you know, now as we're kind of nearing the end of the initial process of just writing the record, you know, and then again, probably, like, you know, get into the studio, like, really soon. It's really cool because I couldn't be happier with what's going on now, like what we're doing now, the sound that we've developed and that will be present on the new album. And really kind of introducing ourselves to the world for the first time, at least in my opinion. Like, this will really be the first time that you'll hear Joyce Wolf as a band, as a unit, as what we are. And I think that's going to be really cool.
Can I ask you a question? And it might be a little bit too, too exposed. Yeah. never mind. So I wanted to ask you one thing in particular, because you mentioned something about what other people wanted you to do or suggested, or potentially maybe just said you could achieve B if you do A, right? So when you're putting the calculations together, do you feel like that was put, because you're on Roadrunner, or at least that record came out on Roadrunner, I don't know the future of your career is, obviously. Okay, so I mean, just having a lot of years inside of that industry lane and being through those mechanics of, like, well, we love you, and if we work with this producer, right, we would definitely think that you're going to come out with an incredible product. And then you get in that situation, you're like, this is dog shit. And I have no control anymore. Ultimately, I'm stuck in dog shit lane. Where do you feel like the disc? Sometimes it's not like that. Most of the times nowadays, it can be the betterment of the artist, because you do have a little bit more control with streaming. You saw what happened. Your radio went to triple, you know, song went to AAA radio without the label, you know, at that point in time. It's like, you know, that's hard. So where do you feel like the disconnect kind of happened or started to happen?
I mean, I don't know. It wasn't like someone walking up to us and saying, like, hey, you should do this. It was never like that. There are very few moments in my career where I can really think of something like that. There was just a lot of pressure, I think, because one, we had extremely little time. Like we wrote that EP and tracked it in probably 3 weeks. Okay. Like not, and that's not even total days. Probably if you added it all up, it's probably somewhere within 12 days, 10 days. And we just came off a fall run in 2018 and it was like, can't wait to hear the new music. And we were all like, oh yeah. Yeah. You know, we didn't have any.
Yeah.
So, and again, but there was a good thing to that because, you know, there are songs I really love. I feel like I don't like the music that we made. It was more like the conditions just weren't ideal. And again, you know, we worked with Howard Benson and it was great because he taught us a lot of great stuff. But I think ultimately there were too many cooks in the kitchen, too many outside people getting involved, you know, especially with the original mix and all this other stuff. Like we weren't super cool with, you know, but it wasn't like anyone like held a gun to us and said we had to do anything a certain way. It was just kind of that aura of like, okay, what are you expecting? And you just want to please, you know, it's that early stage and you just want to please. And that's all I was, I just want to please, you know. And it's not like I don't like the record. I just don't think it's representative of like, of a style that, I mean, our style completely. I think it's limited because it's an EP and it's short, you know. And, but I think ultimately it had to go, it was good that it went that way because I don't think we were ready for that. For what we wanted to do yet anyways. I mean, after that, we went on the craziest touring we ever did. And we did 120 shows in like 7 months. And it was just nonstop. And which I'm thankful for because, again, you know how busy 2020 turned out to be.
yeah.
I'm glad we did that. And in that time period, you know, we just toured. We toured until we hated it, you know. And we were all exhausted and ready to go home. But all of that kind of redefined how we played as a unit because, you know, when you play together, you know, you play together that much. And we had never done any kind of touring to that extent. You know, we had done a couple of weeks here and there and then we'd stop and do a couple more weeks. But this was just like, you know, like across multiple tours, you know, it was like we did 88 shows with Buck Cherry, 7 with Slash, and then 33 with Deep Purple.
Damn.
And it was just like, wow. By the time that we got to the end of that, we were just spent. But again, you know, when you play your music that much, you get a kind of a look at like, do I like how this is? Is this how I want things to be? You know, and how I want to sing, how I want, you learn a lot about yourself in those periods. And we learned a lot. And, you know, taking that into, you know, what we're doing now, plus, you know, the world being shut down and really all of us having nothing much else to do except write. So, you know, we used it as, you know, make it into lemonade, you know.
Yeah. Encouraging to hear. Sorry, Justin, I was just gonna say it's encouraging to hear the lemonade referenced after all that, because there's a lot of young bands who've been through that. When I say young bands, I mean like you said your first touring extravaganza like that, who after the words there's not a one of the members is gone, right? Or you come home and you're like, nope, that's not what I dreamed about when I was a child, you know.
Yeah,
putting your nose down and finding the lemonade is huge. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, we're tough, you know. We're not, you know, we knew what we signed up for, and it's hard sometimes, but again, those are learning experiences. You know, next time it's like, you know, 2 months max, and then we want like, you know, a couple weeks off. And then we'll go do another thing. Like we realize that's what we want to do. You know, that's how we want to do it. You just learn to be smarter about it. And, you know, you get new people along the way, you know, better management, better this, better that, improving everything along the way. So by the time that we got to Deep Purple, you know, we had a vehicle that had bunks in it so we could sleep comfortably, and, you know, things like that change everything. You know, that was like
the dynamics are way different.
Yeah. 3 years of us touring, you know, in our van, you know, and doing the whole, all that stuff, you know, the paying our dues, so to speak. And we definitely did, you know, and I'm proud that we did it that way. And we learned. And I think that's the cool part is like, I think we're in a really good place because I feel like I'd much rather people's first impressions be what they're going to see going forward than what we were. Because, you know, we were still kind of learning things, and we're always still learning, but I'm saying, but I think now we understand aspects of it that we totally had no grasp of prior.
When you're talking about learning experiences, I was curious, you went out with a band that's been in the business a long time, Buck Cherry, but you also went out with two very iconic figures, obviously Slash, but I'm more interested in and what a band like yours can learn from a band like Deep Purple, who started much like you, probably in like 69, 68.
Yeah.
Same kind of sound kind of thing, mm-hmm. and then expanded it by adding a little bit more. But what is learned and what any great stories from that tour? Because I think I ran into you guys somewhere along the road in 2019. And I didn't really get a chance to sit down and talk with you about it.
Yeah, you definitely did. You and like so many other people. But learning from Deep Purple, I mean, it's a class thing. You know, they just had so much. They're like royal. You know, they just have this mastery of their craft. You know, mm-hmm. a guy like Ian Gillan, who I had more than a few moments with, which, and I will cherish those for the rest of my life, you know, to pretty much meet, like, if there was like a, you know, a mega Rushmore of like singers, like he's in that conversation, you know, and he's a true master, and watching him every night, you know, you can tell, I'm like, this guy's done this so much to the point where it is effortless. He's older and the notes are harder to hit and yeah. stuff like that, but he goes for it. And he has this confidence, and there's not a shred of insecurity. It's completely shedded of that. He's just completely focused. And mm-hmm. you look at how studious they are, perfectionists, you know, like, and they're really doing it like at a level that is not expected of, especially, you know, people think of people in, you know, their late 60s and early 70s, like to be like, you know, useless people sitting in benches and whatever, and like, which is, you know, super ageist or whatever, but like, yeah, you know, but these guys are up there just crushing it and doing the thing, you know, and getting to know them and, you know, getting to have small conversations about music with Ian, and him telling me about, you know, don't do drugs and don't drink. You know, it's like that.
Ian, sure.
Yeah, well, you know, he's just like, you know, how old are you? And I was like, everybody asked, how old are you? And I said, I'm 25. And he says, do yourself a favor, remember 25.
Yeah. I was thinking too that everyone in your band, Robert, Blake, and Greg, all learn from the players, whether it be Steve Morris or Roger Glover or Ian Pace. Yeah. I mean, there's something to pull from everyone. They're not just a one-man band.
They were so kind to us. You have no idea. We were blown away at their kindness, at their sociable, you know, activity with us. Because, you know, I figure at that point, you're like, you don't want to hang out with some dumb guys from SoCal, you know, these kids you open it up and. You know, and I remember that they would watch sometimes and, you know, getting a nod from them, like good stuff, you know, that was a big deal to me. And I worked my butt off on that tour because those crowds did not give a shit about us.
I'll tell you what though, just from my perspective, is that a band like Deep Purple taking you guys out is actually something that's great for them, because it makes them have to rise to the challenge of trying to keep up with a younger, very enthusiastic band. They don't have to prove it to anyone. But to them inside, I can imagine it's like, hey, we don't want to let these young Turks
I don't think that's the energy that was there. I think it was very much like, I think they definitely thought what we were doing was good, and if they appreciated mm-hmm. our effort and whatever. Sure. I mean, I talked to the crew and whatever, and they all thought I was a psychopath and, you know, I was always just trying to put on a show. And that was the main thing I told you, is like, mm-hmm. because, you know, the hardest thing, like, rarely do you watch a set and then you remember a song, like its name and how it went, like the first time you hear it. Like, it's not, it's been like, especially in a live venue where it's loud and boomy and, you know, so it's like this whole thing where someone a long time ago was like, you know, if you want, like, I want them to see how great the rest of my guys are and what we actually do, you know, how we feel about what we do. And I do, I would perform that way because I was like, okay, I'll get you invested and then you can see everything else because I only get 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes yeah, less.
The ringmaster.
You know, and I really have to. And again, on the Deep Purple tour was probably peak me going nuts every night. It was just like putting my body through as much pain as I probably could put it through. And just kind of, you know, counting the bruises all over my legs, my back, and you know, my wrists, and breaking the bottom of my foot. And like, really just, I mean, I'd leap off the stage, no matter how high it was, and run through the crowd and, you know, do handstands on chairs that were empty, and just pretty much be like, I don't care if you don't like it, you're going to remember it. And sure, and that sure. That's just the revolving thing. That's what was always in my mind. And yeah, I mean, the energy from Deep Purple was very much like of a, they were happy to have us, and that's what it felt like. They were, you know, and it was very, very cool. I mean, they went up there and the crowd's there for them. They don't have to work. You know, when Smoke on the Water comes on, you're forgotten pretty quickly, you know?
Yeah, but you know, at some point, they were you guys, and they understand that.
I think they most definitely did. Steve Morris and actually brought Blake up. We, you know, we got to post this video. I don't know why we haven't, but he called Blake up, and Blake got to play Smoke on the Water with Deep Purple at the very last show. And I remember watching that, and it's like, you know, suddenly I'm thrown back to the moment of meeting some kid at Guitar Center in the acoustic room. And I'm like, that's that guy. That's my guy right there. My fucking guy up there, you know?
That's dope. Yeah. And you're setting him up, man. I'm just going to knock him down. So I wanted to talk about Guitar Center because I read that. I was like, because I mean, dude, you said you're 20. How old are you now? 27 then or something? 25?
26.
Okay. So I'm 37 and I started to do the touring band thing when I was, I just call it 19 for all intents and purposes, been in and out of it. But in my small town, which is very different than Orange County, it's Port Huron, Michigan. It's nobody cares. There was no music centers like that. So I would have to drive about an hour to the Guitar Center. And when I get there, I was massively like overwhelmed and super shy. But all I wanted to do was like play around with pedals. And I met this kid who ended up, long story short, being a band member of mine through this same exact scenario. He was from a small town. When you guys, were you more one of you working at Guitar Center or were you just both? Okay, so same story. So happenstance in there jamming or what?
Well, here's the thing that we always, you know, every time something comes up, like we always end up talking about how weird it really is. It's like, because we were together for all of maybe 15 minutes and he doesn't even live in my part of town. And I was only over there. I don't even live in that part of town. I was over there because I was with my old band that I was in at the time. And we were just in Guitar Center, just killing time on like, you know, summer afternoon. Or like spring afternoon. I actually don't really remember exactly what month it was, but it was the noise pollution at a Guitar Center, and this one's at a mall, so no one's in there buying it, and it's just kids off the street. You know, it just sounded like, you know, like
Stairway all day.
Yeah, 40 dudes playing Stairway, all in different tunings.
My nightmare, by the way. I'm just sorry.
Yeah. No, it was. I remember being like, we just had practice and I was like, ugh, you know? So I remember I just went into the acoustic room and I was the only one in there and it was dead silent. And I was like, oh, beautiful. I'm sitting down plucking at a guitar string and I would always bring a tuner with me to Guitar Center because I just liked having my guitar in tune, and Guitar Center has a kind of reputation of not having any guitars in tune. So this guy comes in, you know, and I spot check him and I just see he's this dude with the crazy blonde hair, like all over the place. And I'm like, oh, all right, go back to what I'm doing. And he's trying to tune this resonator guitar. and it's not going well. And I was like, hey man, catch. And I threw him a tuner. He tuned the guitar up. I was like, you want to jam? He's like, sure. And we played a little bit of Four on the Bayou, just for fun. I don't even know why I chose that song. I was like, you know CCR, you know?
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, you're a good singer. And I was like, yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. He's like, you're in a band? I'm like, yeah. He's like, do you need a guitar player? And I was like, no, I already have two in there. But something, it's like one of those things. I was like, you know, but hey, here, add me on Facebook or whatever. Add me on, give me your phone number. Maybe if I ever do anything else, maybe I'll call you. If anything happens, he's like, yeah, sure. And then 6 months later, I dropped out of college and I called up drummer Robert and I was like, hey, you want to do this? And he said, I'll call you back. Because he was considering quitting music at that point. And then a couple of minutes later, he called me back and was like, all right, sure. And I was like, he's like, do you have a guitar player or do you have a bass player? And I was like, I got this guy. I don't really know how he plays really, but I met him once. And Rob was like, what? That's like, you don't even heard him play. And I was like, I just have a feeling about him. And then I actually got to see like some videos that Blake had posted online where he's just absolutely shredding the hell out of the guitar. And I was like, I guess I have good instincts. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll take credit. I discovered Blake Allard. no, but fuck. Yeah. So we had our first rehearsal and Greg joined shortly later and he had been playing with Robert since high school. And it all just, that was it. That was all she wrote.
Dude, that's so cool. That's so happenstancely cool and so annoying that you got that, like you were in that space. And like it worked out for you just as like dude who's who, like very rarely do you ever hear that story. I'm like, oh, that's cool. So like that can really fucking go down. Congratulations. No, it's great, man.
Yeah. It's strange all the time. You know, like yeah. I met Robert when I was on my first day of student orientation for middle school.
Wow.
You know, he just happened to be sitting behind me because of the alphabet. And he and I just
became
friends. And he was the first guy that I ever knew that had a drum set. And I remember one time there was a battle of the bands. This is always my favorite story to tell. It was a battle of the bands. And me and Robert were already critiquing these these middle school bands playing. We're like, God, this sucks, you know, ruining our lunch. And I was like, I could do better than that. And I stood up on this little wall that we'd prop ourselves up against. And I was like, everyone, I'm going to be the best singer ever. You know, boastful young Nick. And I didn't know how to sing, but they're like, you can't sing, you can't do that. And they're all kind of shitting on me a little bit. And I was like, and Robert's going to be my drummer, because Robert was the only person. Robert had received a drum set like months earlier and he was the only drummer I knew. So I was like, and Robert will be, Robert was being like, what? But I do remember Rob being like, nah, man, like, yeah, Nick, you could do it. You know, he was super supportive. I remember that. It was like a little thing like that.
15 years later, those naysayers in class are now calling you looking for tickets. So
yeah, that's actually happened. And that in the past, 2019, that actually happened really for the first time. And I was like,
sorry.
You're like, Greg, you owe me $1.50 from back in the day.
Lunch money.
Yeah,
no, that's awesome.
It's like, maybe I can get some tickets. I'm like, yeah, you can get them online. They're $10.
Hey, here's Nick, the link. Nick, in your formative years, did you have any music training? Were you like someone who picked up piano young or guitar or lessons?
I can bang on a guitar. I'm not a guitar player. I'm a strummer. If someone says, hey, Nick, can you play guitar? I'm like, I can strum one. I got one right here actually. But yeah, I learned guitar just so that I could have something to sing to. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but not no real musical training. Up until recently, I've worked with a vocal instructor named Melissa Cross, and she's changed everything for me in so many ways.
Yeah. Melissa's awesome.
You're familiar with
her. I mean, I'm just gonna say, like, next I'm sure you went through the same exact, just to compound on that, like you probably realize a lot of different things about your body, not just your vocal cords, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just doing it long enough, like I it's weird. I always tell people, like, I feel muscles in my skull, like in my throat and in my ears and stuff that I didn't before, but I can like I can tweak and move around. And she broke it down scientifically, and she really adjusted it. Like, she went and watched like a bunch of videos of me singing on YouTube and whatever, and she made pretty much the call of like, okay, this is how I've narrowed it down exactly for you and what'll work for you. I think what was funny is like she's like the zen of screaming, you know. She teaches people how to scream without hurting themselves, and then all of a sudden I come to her and I'm like, I want to learn how to sing, and she's like, oh. You know, and I think that was different for her, at least in for the majority of the time. And I think she's actually quite happy with it, because we've made a lot of progress, and she's seen that, and she's very proud of me and makes me happy.
That's great.
Did, I love that. Did that training with her and her instruction, did that help as far as developing this? Does this change now that you guys are going to apply to your music with the new album?
I think musically, like, I mean, we're still the same band. We're still a rock band, you know, at sure. our core. So it's like, it's not like we're, again, it's not like we're making a, you know, the Afro funk stuff.
No, just more so in the way that you're going to approach your vocals, you know?
Yeah. Musically, I think we were going there anyways. I think you could already kind of see there's subtle changes on, like, if you look at like our first two tracks, which is like our cover of Mississippi Queen and then Slow Hand. And then, you know, there's more of that on the EP, but there's also some slightly different things like Feel Below, like you brought up, which was an adventure into something different, into a different sort of spectrum. And we kind of want to be a band that will do anything. You know, we're inspired by, you know, bands like Led Zeppelin in the way that they kind of did whatever. You know, mm-hmm. It didn't always have to be the Immigrant Song or Black Dog. It could be, you know, Hot Dog or you know, Going to California. It could be anything. And that's kind of mm-hmm. the zen that we picked up. Vocally, it just made me better. It just made me stronger, and it made me feel confident in my just myself, I guess.
That's huge. I mean, standing up straight is like I'm not doing it right now, but I'm assuming I did some classes with her as well, but I realized, I don't know if this happened to you at all, but like I would be doing weird shit in public after that, and I didn't realize I was doing it, like, because I would start to feel like these things that weren't really being like utilized before, but it supported like everything else. Everything felt easier to do it as long as I kept my back straight and I did this. And so I'm like eating dinner with my girlfriend, you know, at some fucking restaurant. Here I am going. She's like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, I can feel this weird thing. Can you feel that? Watch me. I'm just making noises, showing her, you know, that sort of shit." It really did change like just my whole output and my physical human nature.
I think she just helped me. I mean, it's funny, like I was on tour. If you look at like the first shows of the tour compared to my last shows of the tour, I mean, obviously there's wear and tear, you know, especially because of the amount of shows we played. But I was singing incorrectly, and it was making me it was making my voice tired faster. And so she pretty much showed me how to regulate that, because for the most part, she told me my form was pretty good. I sing with my diaphragm, you know, I know how to do that. But she just kind of made it, she just made it simpler. She just, you know, I've been to some vocal teachers before, and it was always, okay, let's start doing scales. She was the first person to really like analyze me as an individual, because that's what I required of her. I was like, I want to clean myself up a little bit, and she helped me achieve that. And I'm still working on that, and hopefully it's keeping better.
Great, great stuff, man.
Hey, you were talking about being adventurous. You referenced Zeppelin as far as that. Now, let me ask you, there's obviously with the way the industry is now and with Spotify, I think there's this new paradigm as far as like fans kind of exploring more of your catalog and being a little bit more open-minded. Do platforms like Spotify allow a band like you not to be pigeonholed anymore, and you can kind of venture out and create your Zeppelin 3 and things like that?
I mean, again, I use Zeppelin very loosely. I just mean that turning in any corner kind of thing. I mean, you could use other bands too, like bands like
Sure, Police, of course, of course. But I just want to use something that the audience could kind of grasp on.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that question. I have very mixed feelings with Spotify. As I think most artists do, it's like, yeah, thanks for giving us a place to put our stuff, but you know, you could pay us more.
Well, yeah, of course. But I was just maybe speaking about the sense that it allows you to kind of create this freedom because the audience now is free to search this massive landscape of different kinds of music.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely an opportunity for that, but I'm not entirely. I haven't heard too much of. I don't know. I've never actually thought about it. To be honest with you. I still think the number one way of doing that is playing. I mean, I remember getting into arguments with people years ago telling me that I would never get XXX without like 100,000, followers on social media. I'll never get any of these things if I don't have this stuff. And then I went, you know, with Joyce Wolf and we got all the things that they said we wouldn't get.
Yeah.
And again, I just realized, you know, like, how we've made a market, how we've stayed in this conversation in new rock is like, we didn't have a record up until 2019. So before that we had already made ourselves, you know, we put ourselves out there, you know, people were learning about us and it was all because of our live show. And, you know, everything that we built was just the fact that we were a good live band. And that was our most important focus, you know? And again, when we released music, it was more of a necessity for the first time with Place and Time. Because it was like, now we have something to provide in the other realm. And now it's getting to the point, okay, now we want to do an entire like event. We want to do this whole thing, you know, this, we want to do a real record, a real album, you know, as opposed to just a collection of songs.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about, because Justin, you mentioned this, and I think there's a perfect example of how it does work for and against you. As you said, Nick, you Odyssey, right? That's your pigeon. That's your pivot. Back in the day, before these DSPs would exist, that wouldn't even be an option on the table, especially when you're dealing with a label like Roadrunner, unless the song was, and not to say the song isn't great, but unless the song was just like, it's here and now, and if we don't move, it, you know, like, then this won't happen, right? So A, B, C, right? This way, in this day and age, there's no pressure to do like a few songs and then follow it up how you'd like. And I use this artist Bishop Briggs as a great example of how it worked out for her career, simply by using the ABC thing. Only one full, in this story, there was only one full record before her last record. But before that was an EP and singles, of which that full length had, of all those EP, that one EP and singles had about 70% of the 12 songs that were on it were already released. And then she added a few new ones, which essentially just would have been an EP. Were they all coagulatedly put together as one fluid book? Absolutely not. But she set herself up to do things like play the late night show with two songs out. Right. And she just created this area before she even goes out and does what you or I would do, which is getting in the van and touring and playing to, like, you know, if we're not on a support tour, on our headlining tour, a few people, a couple hundred at the best, you know, when you were talking about the early stages, where she, two songs out, now she's selling rooms out and prefacing what will come. So in that set, in that case, the DSPs, like the idea of how she was able to create her own story works, but the fluidity of it is not there like when you're ready to make a book, an album, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we've released compilations too. Like, again, like the Mother Rebel EP was strictly just because of Mother Rebel's radio success. And and it was cool, you know, and it was cool to play off of that and give Mother Rebel its due, because that's one of our older tracks, and see it. It was a confident thing. Like, yeah. You know, like, that's really cool. This song that we've had forever that we always thought was good, that we wanted to be the original single anyways, ended up going and doing that, which was fantastic. And really, really made us happy. It really cheered us the hell up. We needed that. And now we get played. We're played on KLOS every day. I hear it. People text me about it. I'll be in the car sometimes and I'll turn the car on and, you know, it's the resting station. So I turn it on and there's my song and I'm like, wow, today's better now.
That's cool. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I just thought about, and I'm assuming, you know, like in a perfect world, Rebel, this song would have been your single if you had your choice, and this would have all been achieved way earlier, right? But it never works out that way.
I mean, not even. I mean, I'm such a now, I'm a here and now kind of person, you know, and I'm always working about and thinking about, okay, what today brings. So I'm like, you know what, maybe it just wasn't the time. And I think of it like that, like it happened this way. I mean, I think everything's pretty random as far as that. And I'm like, you know what, this happened and this is what it is. And that's the life of this song. And I like that it has such a longevity to it. And I see that being a song that's pretty important, probably forever now, it'll always be the one that did the thing, you know, for the first time.
That didn't get away.
Yeah. And you know, that's why I'm like, you know, for like our song Odyssey or whatever, you know, it was released during a pretty ridiculous time. And you know, the song is there. If you know, if people pick up on it more later, then I'm happy about it. But as of right now, it's just kind of like, okay, well, everything we've done, like I just want to beat it 100 times over. And you know, we're writing, you know, the moment the EP was out. You know, we were writing on the road. We pretty much went through everything that we had recorded on our phones for like the last 3 years, like earlier this year, and or I guess the or late last year, and started picking, you know, probably through hundreds of little sound bites, and you know, picking 50 that we liked, and then working on all of them and seeing what happened. And now we've gotten to this point where we have an extensive body of work, and it's almost done. It's almost time to go into the next stage of it. And, you know, that's all we've ever wanted as a band. And this is really important to us because we're not going to slack off. Like, this is going to be something that shows that we are not just some little band from SoCal that got lucky, you know?
Yeah.
We work hard for what we do.
Yeah. You know, right now, no one has a crystal ball, but timing seems to be everything. And Chad and I have spent a lot of episodes talking to bands who've put records out beginning of last year, mid-year, and now they're kind of sitting on them. And, you know, obviously you want to get the core of those. Right now, what you guys have going on might be pretty much hitting it right on the nugget, is that getting the album out. And then hopefully by that time, we'll have some sort of opening in the tour business.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to really decide a lot. As far as hold on 1 second, I let my dog out of the room.
Is it a pee or a poop, do you think?
Well, he's off to do whatever he's gonna do.
He's just going to work.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. I was saying though, sorry, where was I? What was I saying?
We were talking about the album coming out hopefully at a time can go right into touring. Yeah.
I mean, touring again, what I've heard is the fall, that's when we're going to start to see shows, you know, resume, mm-hmm. like in a big way. And I'm hoping for that, you know. And until then, you know. But I think for us, it's like, we don't want to release this entire record until we know we can support it. Like,
yeah,
I did find it kind of weird that some bands decided to release it during like the middle of the pandemic. And because I was like, that's just, I don't know. To me, it's like suicide. I'd rather wait until I can actually go and work this, you know, and spend all this time and effort and, you know, tears. Trying to get this thing to fly, just to let it sit under the radar because everything's closed down. Like, I'm gonna, you know, so I think at the earliest, late 2021, you know, late fall at the earliest, and at the latest, probably next spring, like the spring after the coming one.
Okay. So the festivals I'm seeing on your eyes, because I said you have two download dates and then something in Norway right, and then something here in Michigan. Leave it up to Michigan to be ready to pull the punch in July. But as that stands, are you guys just going over there just as one-offs and probably not doing the whole European connection thing?
It all depends. It really depends. Right. I mean, okay. We won't know about that until we get way closer, you know, because so much is happening right now with, you know, all of that. Yeah. And yeah. Things are looking better, though. You know, I see the light. I always tell people, I'm telling my friends, like, I see the light, man. I see it.
And they're like, let me take your temperature.
Yeah.
I want to ask one on the live tip real quick while we're talking about it. I saw that you did go up with dates in December of 2020. And I'm assuming, obviously, because I saw as, you know, I'm a talent buyer in here in Detroit. So constantly in those conversations, and they were like, Texas is going to do dates. Florida's going to do dates. And I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. Like, it doesn't, but it does. And I can see why anybody would be capitalizing in that moment. Like, oh, if you're open, let's fucking do it. Right. But I was curious on both for the podcast and for my selfish self. Why did they go away? And B, did you really want to do them? Or was it just like, okay, I'll let you take it from there.
Well, yes and no. Of course I wanted to. Of course I wanted to. Sorry, one second. Of course I wanted to. I wanted to play again. I mean, there's nothing on this earth that I love more than that. You know, nothing I love more than to go back to my life. You know, but you know, we just couldn't live with it. We couldn't, like, you know, the moment that we were like, it was a prospect and it was possible, we were like, so we were uneasy about it. Yeah. And we're like, we couldn't live with the fact that if somebody got sick at one of our shows, someone got hurt. Like, we couldn't live with that.
You know? Good on you.
We just couldn't.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not judging anyone who did take that, because I get it. You know, especially when you're a musician who has no money, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, or, you know, you're hurting like that, you know, it's like, it's tough, you know, and that's a big deal. Really. It really is. And yeah, I just remember, like, initially, like right after we like announced or whatever, I just remember all of us kind of feeling really not good about it. And that's why everything kind of, we're like, you know what, let's just go write this album.
Yeah. And for those that are listening, we're talking about indoor shows. We're not like, this isn't a drive-in or a pod situation that you're seeing happening around. Like, and I saw it too. And I was like, cause I mean, I heard about those states in particular. And I was like, I don't exactly, do you get it? I just don't know how. On my side, how I could be in that room with my fans that came out right during the period, and then one of them gets sick because it's to their grandpa and they die. I'm going to think about that forever. And that to say that, like, that would happen, but it's a hard thing to not juggle. If we were outside, different, right?
That was more important than us playing some gigs, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A million times more important. And, you know, it was not going to happen from the moment that, like, anyone thought it was.
Yeah, good thinking.
Good to know.
Yeah,
and,
really,
and
let's see how it goes. You know, yeah.
Nick, you mentioned being. Nick, you mentioned being on the radar. Well, you came on the radar of a lot of us when you did Shiprock for the first time, and you obviously, you guys came back. We'd love to know about your experience and with Shiprock and the people who join us, the Shiprockers, and just kind of give us a brief your take on it.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful because we were just no one. And I remember we had that first time, we had like six different performances. You're like, okay, you're going to do an acoustic at the pre-party. You're going to do this. You're going to be part of Stowaways. You're going to do that. You're going to do that. And I was like, I got this. And my voice was just shredded by the end of it because I was talking to people. I'm a social, you know, and I loved. And my whole thing was like, I want everybody on, again, I want everyone to remember me. And I'm like, I'm trapped on this boat with all these people. They can't run away from me. Like,
oh, dear God.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know if you noticed about me, but I will take a photo with everybody I meet on tour, a little selfie of me and that person. And I did that every single show
up until the last shows we did at the beginning of 2020. Because I just wanted to remember everybody. And I did that on Shiprock, and I did that on the last Shiprock that I was on at the beginning of 2020. I just like meeting people, and I just like that energy. I don't know. I like talking. I love getting perspective, and even if it's nothing like mine, you know, and Shiprock pretty much gave us an opportunity to be in front of a lot of really passionate people. And those people, you know, gave us places to sleep on the road, and they would feed us and bring us stuff, give us gifts, and all these wonderful, nice people.
Yeah.
That being said, I also witnessed a lot of questionable things on Shiprock. A good friend of mine who was on the first one can vouch for me. Sydney Dolezal from Dollskin and I witnessed quite an interesting moment on Shiprock of very late at night and some public nudity in the lobby. That was something. I don't want to go into detail.
We wouldn't be the same without it. So yeah, but you mentioned taking photos and talking to everyone. That gives you a lot of legs and makes you very endeared to these people. And as you said, it kind of pays off when you're on the road and they come see your shows and they help you out as far as giving you lodging and food. So yeah, well, thanks for giving us your take on that. Obviously, we will see Joyous Wolf again on the deck stage at some point. So, yeah.
I mean, hopefully the next time I'm there, it's when we get to be the main band. That's what I want. If we're going to do that again, I want to be the hailstorm. You know, that's what I want.
All right. Well,
you're going to have to get a new SD card, but you're going to fill up those camera SDs. Those camera photos are going to be so large.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying, man. Like, I mean, I have them all backed up. I have every photo I've ever taken with a fan since 2017. When we started doing our tour.
That'd be a great book. That'd be a great like photo book.
I have them. They're in my other room here.
Yeah, like a good hardback. That'd be fun.
I print them out. I have because what I do is at the end of every run, I would take every collage I made because I would post the collage of every show every night on our story on Instagram. And I take all of them and then I turn that into a big collage. And I was hoping for like the 5-year anniversary, I would get every single one that I ever took, every collage that I made, and then, you know, blow it up to like a painting around this size and then just put it in my house.
Yeah. That'd be a Where's Waldo? Awesome. Yeah. Listen, we like to usually end these with a thing called Walk the Plank. We ask you three questions, one from Chad, one from myself, and then one from one of the Shiprockers that they post to us. And they're just random questions. Probably usually never do with music either. So just give your whatever answer comes in your mind. So Chad, you want to begin that?
Yeah, I was looking through all my questions and while we were talking, trying to find the right one. And I don't know if I found the right one, but I'm going to ask. So if you could take a lesson from any expert in any activity ever, what would that activity be? That you would take a lesson in?
I would love Gordon Ramsay to teach me how to cook.
That's hot shit. All right. Yeah. Do you know how to cook at all?
I do.
PB&J in mac and cheese like me?
I can throw down, man.
All right. I'll come on over. See you later. That's good. That's a good answer.
All right, Nick. My question is this. Your druthers, would you... rather have no one show up to your wedding or your funeral?
Wedding.
So you want to be present to watch the literal guest check-in number zero? You're like, all right, well, yeah, nobody wants this.
Well, we're going to have to ask the wife to be whoever that may be about that.
Well, I'm still, yeah, obviously this is a fantasy world, but
of course.
In my defense, what I'll say is a wedding is about she and I. Mm. Funeral's about me.
That's hilarious.
Well played. All right, Chad, you want to bring in the fans' question to Nick on this?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would assume that you know what your astronomical sign is, bro, right? So, do you think that you possess anything? The sign is like, what sign are you, and are you like that sign in any way?
I am a Libra, and there have been many times where I'll read descriptions of Libras and feel uncomfortable because I'm like. Yeah. I think my favorite one was this meme. It was like, you know, one of those be like memes, like Libras be like, and it's like, are you cool? If you're cool, I'm cool. Like, if you're not cool, I'm still cool. But if you're cool, I'm cool. And that's pretty much.
That's great. I'm a Leo and I read it every time and I'm like, that sounds really aggressive to me.
Generalities. I don't think there's any actual like shit to it. I know some people that swear by it and I'm like, look, guys.
It sounds very Libra of you.
Yeah, there's actually a really funny story. Is like, and I would be glad to put this out into the world. Anyone who watches this, Greg, Blake, and Rob are all Geminis. So if you go on their social media, make sure to call them Geminis. Like, say you're such a Gemini, and it'll trigger them so hard. Please do it for me. I love you. Goodbye.
Isn't that the twin thing where isn't that like a twin symbol?
I think that's the Gemini. Isn't that, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. What's a Libra? It's like go with the flow kind of thing.
I'm the balance, the scale. Oh, you're
calm in the storm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the so scale, dude.
Yeah, that's right. That's
great.
Thank you for the answers to Walk the Plank. Nick, we've had you for an hour, man. We can't thank you enough for your time. And I know you guys are working on this album. We look forward to it. Anyone out there checking it out? You can still check out all the stuff they have out. Pretty much wherever you get streaming services, but better yet, go buy hard physical copies of their products.
Google Joyous Wolf and you will find us.
So is it joyouswolf.com where they can go to pick up apparel and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we actually just released some new merch items. You can get like hoodies, t-shirts, beanies.
Cool. All right. Well, you know what? It's still winter for a while, so grab those while you can, guys. Look, Nick, again, man, thank you again. Thank you for being part of the Sherbuck family. And thanks for giving us your time, man. Good luck with everything in this year.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Shiprock 2022, January. We're leaving out of Galveston and we're heading back to Mexico. So cabins are still available. Go to shiprock.com to pick those up. And you can also go to shiprock.com to pick up some of our new swag. And believe it or not, Chad, did you remember? Do we still have any of the Fuck 2020 shirts?
I think there's like three left.
Three left. Get those.
Last time I counted physically.
EM large and extra large. We have one of each. So go and pick those up, guys. Listen, you've been, you spend time with Making Waves. We are the Shiprock podcast. We are part of the Sound Talent Media podcast family. And before we leave, we have to thank Al, our producer, Jen Zito, our engineer, Heather Smith, our show coordinator, and of course, the captain, Alan Koenig.
Al, I'm your biggest fan, Al.
There you go, Al, Nick, and you guys got to get together, hang out, talk.
Scissor. You should scissor.
That's right. Scissor Brothers. Anyway, have a great weekend.
You too, y'all. Peace and love.
All right. See ya.
Good to see you, man.
I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.